Good morning. The official section at the Atraco, the official section. We're now going to start the press conference. Good morning, as I was saying, we're going to start the press conference of the film which corresponds to the official section, Atraco. We have with us for this the director, Eduardo Cortés. The actors and actresses, Guillermo Francella, Amaya Salamanca, and Oscar Jaenada. And the producers, Gerardo Herrero, Pedro Costa, and Luis Escalella. And they are awaiting your questions. So therefore, the first question.
Aquí en la primera fila, por favor, rápidamente un micrófono. Aquí.
Okay, first question. Hi, good morning. Every time I see a film of this nature, a period piece, I usually ask myself, well, how you worked in setting the atmosphere and the music as well, which is something to highlight as well. And on the other hand, also say that I've pleasantly been surprised by the film because I thought it was very entertaining. Well, okay. Well, good morning. This film stems from an historical fact that the producer, Pedro Costa, talked to me about in the past, or where there are different layers. There are the official layers of, and semi-official, and then all of the information subtracted with the conversation he maintained with a policeman from that period. When the story came along and what happened in the 1950s in Madrid, the first image that came at that time was that sordid post-war and greyish sort of post-war period that we, every time we think about Francoism or that Franco period, obviously we think about that sort of a scenario. And then when I started to document myself in the more bourgeois level, the more American influence, more modern or more modernity, for example, was also entering in a quite obvious manner, or with, for example, aspects like Grace Kelly's wedding or the catwalk with Balenciaga, Pertegaz, and so on and so forth in Madrid. So therefore, I tried to set the atmosphere, which was a bit more glamorous and a bit more cinematographic and much more colorful and less sordid. That was an option that I thought had maintained an historical rigor, and I wanted to take the film to that side. And as of there, everything has worked according to that. That is to say, from the obviously the artistic direction by Pedro Hidalgo, or the photography of Davito Medes, and the construction of the characters, the music by Circo Cusi, everything basically was much more cinematographic, quote unquote. The American cinema, to a certain extent, was influencing the way people behaved when they with the clothes they wore and the hairdos, and that's the way I did it.
¿Más preguntas, por favor?
Further questions? Yes. Microphone, please. Apart from the historical information that you had, with Figueres, how did you prepare the script or the storyline? Well, with Marcelo Figueres, who is the Argentinian script writer, who forms part of the team of scriptwriters who have written the film, the script of the film, to a certain extent, it was a guarantee so as to feel assured in an area which I obviously knew what it was about, but not as in-depth as I've ended up finding out about, which is the phenomenon of Peronism, for example, especially in exile, how precarious the situation was, the feelings, and those different aspects of being a Peronist, for example, Guillermo Francella, who's completely loyal because he's head of security, to Daniel Fanego's role, or more intriguing role that the character who's called Buscali, all of these different aspects, I came to know them through conversations, obviously reading a lot about it, and especially about what it meant to be a Peronist or a backer of Peron, and Mr. Figueres was a very important element within the entire process vis-a-vis the script.
¿Más preguntas, por favor?
Further questions?
Sí, allí, por favor.
Yes, it seems there's one over there. This is for Amaya. How was it to get into the skin of this nurse who was so sweet? And how have you prepared the character to get under the skin of a person who's almost, it was alive almost half a century ago? Well, one of the things obviously that attracted me of the role of playing Teresa, or the whole script, was that atmosphere of the post-war, the 1950s, in which I'd never done anything in that period. So therefore, the series of Grand Hotel, I do period. It's a period piece, but it's the 1900s, early 1900s, and to carry out play a portrait role of Teresa, and to meet with Eduard, the director, and to inform myself about what the society was like back then at that period. And for this, the truth is, the internet, thank God, as soon as you key it into Google, for example, we've got a lot of information at hand that we may need. But above all, with Eduard, who has helped me very much to form or give shape to the character. And that's it. And YouTube as well, I must say, because he wanted to stress that there's a lot of color in the film, and there's a lot of dancing, there's a lot of joy, and he told me I had to dance, and I said I didn't even know how they danced in 1950, so also thanks to YouTube I checked it out to learn what I had to do in those scenes.
Ahí en la cuarta fila.
Fourth row? Yes, hi, Adela Maxonili of the Naughty Mex Agency. I would like to ask you, in the 60th edition of the festival, we've seen several films in the different sections based upon real facts, or real life, or taken from historical facts, where there's a new interest in directors of all of a sudden going back, or thanks to new technologies, from what we learned of the past, taking on a subject matter that may be historic, or part of a real life of in the past, or of someone's real life in the past. No, in my case specifically, I don't think I've ever done anything. I've always dealt with real life issues. Well, I can tell you what I'm passionate about with relation to what's really happened in life. It may be a bit, it might sound grotesque and maybe over the top because of this bank robbery in the film, but what this drew my attention, I wanted to find out what type of characters could have carried out that episode in history, but history is a bit depersonalized in that aspect, so therefore the exercise of trying to find in the people that I've met, or to a certain extent, or in a certain way, the people that I've received information upon intellectually or emotionally to build and construct those characters with the experience of the other scriptwriters, a story which seems like a little episode which exists, and practically with protagonists that are not too well defined, and to shape that up, I think that's very interesting work, and it obliges me to explore into fields that I normally don't, so therefore it's an experience which was very stimulating in that respect, so therefore, possibly when you start, because not such is not obviously the case, and I'm talking about my, about me, when you talk about history, there's a trend that something, there's a tendency that something comes out of you. Apart from real life stories, you've got to go and try to get there, and that journey, in that my case, is one of the most passionate sides of the creative process of the film. Hi, good morning. I would like to ask Pedro Costa, who is a database, really, especially as regards to these issues. What were the real facts that Eduard referred to that you talked to him about? Because at the beginning of the film, it turns out that it's inspired upon real facts or just press articles that have been reinterpreted, shall we say, so as to adjust them to fiction. Mike, could you talk a bit about what real facts are in the film? And then another question for any of the producers. The film has been premiered in Argentina, and I think it's been quite successful. there's a lot of doubts as regards to start up a project like this. What role is played by co-production in this case? Say, how do you finance a film? And that's perhaps a path that should be taken to. Let me explain the origin of the film. The truth in what's published in the press is that in 1956, in the month of May, there was a bank robbery in a jeweler's store, Alao, which continues to exist, which is just in front of El Chicote Bar. And it was a bank robbery, which is quite strange. Two guys dressed like military with a car that they'd stuck up. They put something on it which said army, and with weapons that didn't even shoot, because they didn't shoot at all. They, at least in that bank robbery, they went to the jewelry, they came out, and somebody who is not too precise, who with a gun shot one of the bank robbers, and there were some shots taken in the Gran Via, shots made. They were arrested. Why? Well, because through the injury, they'd met a nurse beforehand, which is the character that Amaya plays. So portrays. So therefore, seeing that one of them was injured, they went to meet with the nurse, and the nurse said, "I can't do anything with a bullet. You've got to talk to a doctor." He talked to the doctor. The doctor talked to the police. The police arrested them, and in 1 week they had a court martial to the three of them, and it was because it was armed attack, and they were condemned to 23 years in jail to both of them. But she was absolved. She was set free. So therefore, they were taken to Puerto Santa Maria, a jail, and there was a strange regime where they were left apart from the rest of the prisoners. A few months later, they escaped in a car on a Sunday afternoon, and after they escaped, they were surprised by the Guardia Civil, who killed them. So therefore, this is quite strange. Why? Because it wasn't too clear who they kept saying they were Uruguayan when they were Argentinian, because they were false passports they were using. They had no prior record, nothing as bank robbers. It's quite strange that two guys they weren't professionals, could escape from the jail in El Puerto, and quite strange that they were expected and waited for them and they were shot. We worked on the case, and I remember we used to have lunch with policemen every day, and one of them, who was a great cop, who caught, whose name was Vicada, and he caught Jarabo, who's a famous thief. He said, didn't talk about it because their background was the jewels of Eva Perón, that Carmen Polo de Franco wanted to visit jewelries and antique stores to the extent that there was as. And this is backed up, and this is explained. Oviedo, Barcelona, Madrid, and the owners of old antique stores, they did a pool. They organized a pool. They said whatever she took, we'd pay them all. Because all of a sudden, she went to Oviedo, and many of the stores closed because Doña Carmen was coming along. And now she liked a piece of jewelry, and the guy in the store, no, this is no one. Then my next-door neighbor's got a piece of jewelry, and they sent her from one store to another. Let's say, why don't we pay it all, and she can take whatever she wants. And obviously, how behind of all of this, what existed was a bank robbery to save the jewels of Eva Perón and to not taking them to El Pardo. Well, this has completely been denied by the people at the Ardao jewelry. Whether the jeweler was involved or not, nobody can know this. What is true, however, is these two guys that came along, one of them really was related to Perón. Their mission was to recover the jewels. And whether they agreed, or maybe the jeweler wasn't in agreement or wasn't in on it at all. But this story also is, not only do I know it, but this story, there are another two scripts upon this same story, written upon the same story. And the DA of the kingdom, Eduardo Torres Dulce, who participates with Garci when he talks in those meetings, has read the story. Whether it's an urban legend, he knows what it's about, because this story has been written about. So therefore, what we did was, with this, as we've done with other things, with Eduard Cortés, other films, and La Vida de Nadie, was to take that real base and develop it, they say create the characters. Obviously, the characters have been invented, they've got a life, they're dramatic, and they've got a sense of humor, and to set up the film and create the film based upon this, to avoid problems with the Aldal jewelry, well, we say, we've changed the name and the date. It's 1955 and 1956 when it really happened. So we don't talk about the Aldal jewelry, it's an imaginary jewelry, which is called the Farran jewelry. We don't want any identification, albeit 56 years have gone by since then. But it is something which, it's a story which is so surprising and so enormous, but if we wanted to fill it with humanity, not limit ourselves, because which is good when you work with real fact. That is to say, we don't want to tell what has happened, but you want to see who are the people involved, what are they like, how they feel, what happens between them. They've participated in something which happened in real life. And the other side, Gerardo will explain that about the production side of things. Well, I hope that from the government it will rectify the policy that wants to carry its politics. So that would be, because that would be a genuine bank robbery to get rid of the Spanish film industry. But behind this industry, nowadays, well, to think that cinema is culture and it's an industry later, but behind cinema industry there are many, many families. Obviously, there are a lot of people that live from this industry. They say cinema is not only the directors and the actors who are the leading and supporting actors. No, it's an entire structure of people who work and live from this industry. If the government continues with this policy, that all of the companies, auxiliary companies, and the relationship relating it to culture and industry and the damage that can do to Spanish cinema, I hope someone who's got some common sense will rectify the policy, the politics that are going down now by about the Spanish government. I could talk a lot about this, but I don't think it's the right thing. I also want to say something. Co-productions for us have been of vital importance. Our relationship with Latin America and Argentina over the years, this has been demonstrated with all the films we've made. We believe in the possibility of making films, important films. I think this film has a production value that if it wasn't due to the production with co-production with Argentina and Spain, we wouldn't have been able to make it. The contribution of Luis Escalera and the Argentinian producers have managed to make the film be produced with the value of production that you've seen on the screen. I continue to trust that we can continue to work in co-production with Latin America. I believe that we're fortunate of being in Europe, and so therefore to co-produce also with Europe. It has been what we've done. That's how we've always worked. That's our handbook of how we worked to co-produce the 128 films that I've produced. I think 80 or 90 of them are co-productions with Latin America and with Europe. So therefore, I think, but for this, we need a solid base within the Spanish industry. Otherwise, we couldn't make films in Spain or with our co-production. And we'll do 100,000 euro high-definition films, and very few could make high-level industrial-type films if we continue the way we're going. Before you, you've got an actor who's Guillermo Francella, that for me is one of the best actors in the world. That is, he's an actor who has the capacity. If someone sees the film, you can see the timing he's got when he portrays his role. We're talking about Sordi or Victorio Gassman. Take full advantage of him because he's here in front of you, okay? Thank you, Gerardo. Eduardo, I want to talk to you about the structure of the film. What was quite curious is that the first hour is almost comedy, and then as of there, it turns around and it turns out like a police or a detective and a melodrama type film. How did you address the structure of the film in that sense? Because all of a sudden comedy disappears in the second part of the film. Well, the truth is that when Pedro talked about this story to me, I received it as such. I say one of the things that excited me was all the dramatic turns in the films. He's explained it in two stages. And then that's been superimposed, but chronologically speaking, it kept turning around. First of all, it was all of a sudden the pawning of jewels, of some jewels, and then the visit of Franco's wife, and those jewels are in danger, and then there's a false robbery that turns into something absolutely demential, and then there's the police investigation, and then at the end of the film with the arrest and so on and so forth. I saw four films at the same time. I thought the first part of the film, Panama, the briefcase going backwards and forwards, and it was like an adventure, and then the idiosyncrasy of preparing and the executing the bank robbery was very clumsy, and it was like Canada said almost Guzman and Sordi and Mastroianni and Rufufu and all of those Italian films. And then and the police inquiry or investigation, we enter into a noir type or detective type film, very period, and we were watching a lot of Kino, Rosia Belletta films of that period that were made at the end of the 50s, excellent films of the noir genre, and so therefore that entered in, and then you got the end of the film. Obviously with this cocktail and all these complicated pieces to fit them all together, I felt a lot of vertigo, but not only me, but I said, well, how are we going to manage to fit all this together? But it was a real challenge, the truth be said. And that is to say, I don't know to what extent we've managed to fit them all together optimally, in an optimal manner or not. But for me, it was also a stimulation. It stimulated me to do this. I said, if we manage to construct characters who looked real, and for that, obviously, the portrayal of these magnificent actors have given a certain amount of truth to those characters, so therefore the audience brought about a change of tone and would conflate, and there'd be and you could feel the emotions while you watch the film. I think at the end of the day we thank the fact that at a given moment the film has made you laugh, then at a certain moment makes you feel more intention and make you cry perhaps at the end, but that convergence of emotions as the audience obviously makes you feel alive, not as a director but as feeling in the audience. I thank that very much, for example, so if we had the opportunity for that to take place in the film, so therefore we decided from the outset to wager in favor of those changes of tone and allow the film to flow organically as we wanted to. Okay, in the front row. Hi. Well, precisely a question for Francella. I would like to know how you construct your character. How did you go about that? How you managed to use that look you've got, which makes you understand he's a character. He's lived a long time, and he's seen a lot of things in life. And congratulations, by the way, and thank you very much. Well, it was very interesting, the entire process. Prior, the meetings with Edward, it was quite clear what he wanted and how he wanted it. So therefore, the rehearsals were very important for me. We worked very much, and in Buenos Aires, we talked via Skype. The internet, like Amaya says, helps you very much for many things, and it was very useful, all of this need that he had, the way he wanted to approach a film, the difference of genre, because it's very heterogeneous and parallel to this. He had the intention that the film would go through Mirello's eyes. They say he considered that not only as of my profession, as a good head of security, no more, no less than Eva Perón and General Perón. He was ahead of everything what was happening. He had an intuition 30 seconds before anyone. So therefore, he suffers with the young kid who's next to him. We didn't find the odd couple, or the good and the bad. That is to say, it was because the kid was very useless and very clumsy, and he couldn't react. He always had to look and observe, and we worked hand in hand with Eduardo. So therefore it was very necessary. He proposed it and permanently suggested this, and when he liked and he got it right and it transmitted, yes, that's the right way to go. He said, pauses, silence, the way I looked at things and used my eyes. We worked very delicately every different instant, every moment in the film. And that's how I constructed the character. Any further questions? Hi, good morning. I'm going to try for the third time to ask a question that I've asked several people this morning, here this week. I'm Yvonne Casas, I'm a rocker, and I've got pigmentary retinosis, and I'm going to fight against it until I die. This is basically the background, okay? I've come here with my social eye, so to speak, accredited by Mr. Rebordinos, to talk about the other vision of Cinemaldi, of the film festival, for a person who's got pigmentary retinosis. And with Paola and Chepe, my manager's not here, there are many people that are helping us. Everyone's helping us free. This is a social project, which is called Give Me Your Vision, and I want to make a film and direct it with the participation of everyone. I'm asking some questions these last few days, and one of these, I'm going to ask you two questions and see what you can say to me. One of them is, what the title, Switch the Light Off and You Can See, for my film, and another one is, and for the director or for whatever, how would you do a casting, by touching people or not? I must say that the Turkish director of Monica Bellucci yesterday, when I asked him, he said, well, switch the light off and look, if you come to Turkey, I'll help you to make a film. I was a bit surprised, and Mr. Bayona thought I was joking. He saw this social eye and everything. And I'm not. This is the strong, great will of. I want. It's a horrible disease which makes you blind at the end of the day. I'm not the only one. There's 100,000. There's 100 million people in the field, and we want to direct a film. Help me if you can, if you want, if you like what we're doing. And these are the questions. Thank you very much. Let me answer you very humbly. By the way, obviously the title I think is quite good. And as regards casting, well, I'm not too sure whether I do it by touching people, but I think that one of the things that helps you is the voice of actors. Obviously, people's eyes and the way they look is very important. I think the way people look and people's voices are two things that an actor can, it's difficult for changing without losing a bit of truth. So therefore, you can make the true bastards, or they can be really saints, and the actor knows how to change that emotionally and to give you that. But the voice is very difficult to change. There are excellent cases of changing voices, but it's very difficult to change. Just like when people look at and use their eyes, because as when people use their eyes, when you switch the lights off, they disappear. I believe if I found myself in that situation, I would guide myself more by people's hands and your voices and actors' voices. I'm not too sure whether I've answered your question. I'm sorry, we can't hear him now without a microphone.
Muy bien, pues.
Okay, this is the end of the press conference. Thank you very much.